It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
What do you plan to do after the All-Star game to get better?
Buy you a new jacket.
Film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show, here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe, we have a website, don't we?
We have a blog.
Why don't you start with the blog while I call our guest?
You can check out our blog, Film Sociology, at filmsociology.tumblr.com. A lot of things to pay tribute to today. The intro, you've heard our friend Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq, if you're listening, hello, Shaq. Shaq, of course, joining the our favorite broadcasters on TNT for NBA on TNT. Starting Christmas Day, we get to see Shaq along with Sir Charles.
Kenny and Ernie.
It's going to be terrible.
Is it Reggie? Reggie Miller?
Reggie's still doing it?
They couldn't get rid of Reggie and keep...
I think Steve Kerr does it.
They don't need Steve Kerr. If you have Kenny, Ernie, Chuck, and Shaq, that's a show right there. So, hey, Lou Harry's going to be here as soon as I go downstairs and bring him into the locked building. So
you almost say locker room?
No, not the locker room. This isn't Penn State or Syracuse. So Kobe, while I go get our guest, and it'll be fun. Do we have the Tommy? What do we got? The Tommy's.
We've got also in honor of paying tribute to a lot of things today.
Is this the our coach?
Yeah, this will be
okay.
Our coach.
I want to set this up. First off, this not only goes out to me because my birthday's on Monday. This goes out to my buddy Megan McKinney, who needs to be on the show. It's her birthday today, and apparently she has reached the number in question. I would never ask her that unless she's here. And this guy, who became a YouTube superstar a few years back, was named National Coach of the Year for college football. That's right, Coach Mike Gundy. And
the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
The Oklahoma State Cowboys. And we haven't played this in a while, but it's a tribute to him. It's a tribute to Megan. It's a tribute to me. And it's a tribute to everybody. This is Film Sociology gift to you, the listener.
Merry Christmas.
Something that has nothing to do with film whatsoever. Here we go.
If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother of children. I think this is worth reading. Let me tell you why I want to talk about this article. Three-fourths of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. And this article embarrasses me to be involved with athletics tremendously. And that article had to have been written by a person that doesn't have a child and has never had a child that's had their heart broken and come home upset and had to deal with the child when he is upset and kick a person when he's down. Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete, and he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. If you have a child someday, you'll understand how it feels. But you obviously don't have a child. I do. If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat, and he comes home crying to his mom, you'd understand. But you didn't have that. But someday you will. And when your child comes home, you'll understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared. That ain't true. And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true. So get your facts straight. And I hope someday you have a child and somebody downgrades them and belittles them and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what? It's okay. They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me? That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
Without question, one of the best, one of the best press conferences.
One of the best rants.
Yes, ever.
A coach in a ranting role?
Oh, most definitely. If the IFJA could give him an award, we would. Lou Harry, thank you for coming.
A pleasure.
It's been a busy Friday for everybody. But yeah, that goes out to Megan McKinney. Happy birthday, dear.
She's and a woman. She's 40.
I'm not going to talk about a woman's age, but yeah. That's Kobe Slagle, by the way.
Thank you, Matt. Okay.
Throwing my guy under the bus.
There we are.
Woo! And yes, congratulations to Coach Gundy on being named National Coach of the Year for football. You deserve it, sir. We know who you are because of YouTube, and we know who that's. And I think that's a great thing. Yeah. Okay, you know that clip we just played probably still more entertaining than the new Alvin and the Chipmunks film that opened today. So, Lou Harry, how are you?
Because we had such high hopes for the new Alvin and the Chipmunks film.
Apparently, now that he's out of his contract obligations, David Cross is, of course, now not promoting the film and reaming it. So, take that for
you got to give him a break. You know, your boy's got to make a little money.
Oh, a lot of money with those three films. So, Lou Harry, arts and entertainment editor at the IBJ and author, co-author of Know Your Zombies, which is in bookstores and should be under your tree or in your stocking stuffer or in your zombie mall outside of Pittsburgh.
There you go.
So good to have you here.
Have to go to the mecca of zombies at some point.
Pittsburgh, the greater Pittsburgh area, thanks to George A. Romero. And tonight, while we're in shameless plug mode, tonight is opening night of It's a Wonderful Life. It's a 1940s radio production, which is being done at Theater on the Square. Now, there's two stages at Theater on the Square, so you want to turn right as soon as you get into the theater. Otherwise, you get the other show, which is not family-friendly.
And the last line in the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, is?
Old Lang Syne being sang.
Not a spoken line.
But not Way to Go, Clarence?
Attaboy, Clarence.
Attaboy, Clarence.
There you go, very
attaboy,
good.
Attaboy, Clarence. I know, I've been watching it for the last month.
That's what I figured.
But it's a 1940, it's a radio production, it's a Wonderful Life as if it were 1940s radio, so we'll have actors doing multiple voices and sound effects, and you'll have a certain film sociology host making a cameo appearance because they need a radio announcer and who else to play it.
But nice. Me. Well, what's also nice is if it works and people enjoy this format, next year I hear you might be doing Child's Play 3 as a 1940s
would
radio
love
show.
Love to do Child's Play 3. I think Equus would be
Equus
great
would be
as a radio play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're making a movie out of War Horse, I guess you could make one out
Well,
of...
they tried to make a movie out of War Horse, but we're not talking about that yet.
No, we're not.
We
can't talk about that just
Sorry.
Yet. So we're going to mention what is opening in theaters, and you can make your choices, and then we'll move on. But as we mentioned, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked, I didn't write it, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, because they didn't want to say Mission Impossible 4, mm-hmm. but it is directed by Brad Bird, so that'll be interesting, hopefully.
I gave up after 2, but I didn't see 3.
Well, it was J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the better of the series, because One, you had Brian De Palma doing the first one, and the story was, I was able to follow it, but it was so convoluted. Right. And then you had John Woo. I love John Woo, but just not in Hollywood.
The problem with me is the first one went from human beings who have certain specializations trying to, you know, find the criminal,
like
go through the process.
Yeah.
They were human. John Woo, number two, they became superheroes.
Yeah.
And I lost interest.
It was kind of sad. And the third one was directed by J.J. Abrams, which had a lot of good slam-bang action. Philip Seymour Hoffman getting to play a blockbuster villain and does it really well.
Right. Who so, will soon be Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
That would be cool.
That will be interesting.
That would be very, very cool. And then we also have Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, which reteams Guy Ritchie and Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. And it's not your dad's Sherlock Holmes. It's not Basil Rathbone. Speaking of butt-kicking superstars,
right.
Holmes and Watson.
Yeah.
And Young Adult, reteaming Jason Reitman, and Diablo Cody, right. Who gave us Juno. And this is the one with Charlize Theron, Patton Oswalt, and Patrick Wilson. Those are all.
Speaking, though, of Basil Rathbone.
Yes.
Starred in a 1950s TV version of A Christmas Carol with Frederick March, and it's being screened at Garfield Park this weekend.
That's why you're here, among other things.
It's an obscurity.
No, that's good.
If you've seen 1,000 Christmas carols.
Which you have.
Which you have. This is a chance to see one that's a little different.
And, of course, on Friday, December 23rd, at 1 o'clock on WFYI HD1, WFYI's A Christmas Carol. That's right. The classic tale with a lot of familiar voices here at WFYI and a lot of cameos. It's done by the staff at WFYI. It is being mixed and edited right now as we speak.
Yep.
Well, maybe not at this moment, but it's in the process.
I was young Scrooge.
Thanks for giving that away. it was going to be like Connery.
What are you going to say?
It was going to be like Connery and Robin Hood, but you just screwed it all up. Thanks.
Or if you play at home, you can guess who your favorite radio personalities are and what roles.
That's right. Yeah, you are young Scrooge. The bitterness hasn't, you know what, the haterade hasn't kicked in for you yet. He plays it like Ryan Gosling in Blue Valentine. It's brilliant. You don't know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
Well, I play Mr. Fezziwig because there has to be a blues Christmas party. So there. Anyway, that's running the 23rd. This is going to be a lot of fun. And you're seeing Willy Wonka tonight, right?
Seeing Willy Wonka up at Civic Theater. We have Frog and Toad this week. A Year with Frog and Toad, Actors Theater of Indiana's production. I'll
That's
be going
right.
to see that tomorrow. That's become an annual event, and it's delightful and wonderful. They're usually up at the Center for the Performing Arts, but they're going to be back at Pike Performing Arts Center this weekend for that.
And, of course, IRT still has the 90-minute carol going on.
They've got a Christmas carol going on there.
All sorts of good stuff.
Very Phoenix. Is
I
still
saw,
going on.
Saw Brian Fonseca last night at Mesh. Now this is sounding like morning radio. good to see everybody there. So yeah, it's good.
And one of Phoenix's best holiday shows in years. They did it
very good.
There's some wonderful stuff in it.
Okay, so now speaking of stuff for the holidays, know your zombies. What did you know about zombie films before the book?
Oh boy, I sort of knew the anchoring films. I mean, I knew
the Romero films.
I knew the Romero films, but I also I kind of got into movies like I think a lot of guys my age did through black and white horror films, through Universal horror films. And the Universal horror stuff was Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, basically with a little mummy thrown
Invisible
in.
Man.
Invisible Man to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But you know, they were sort of the anchoring ones. Zombies really didn't kick in. There was White Zombie. I Walked with a Zombie.
Right. There was a little bit of Walking Dead. It was more voodoo than, say, flesh eating.
Right. And it started at a time when, you know, the creatures had personality in those films. You look at the Frankenstein monster. You look at Dracula. You look at the Wolfman.
And
it was
thank
about
you for saying
the
Frankenstein monster. Have yeah, we're that guy.
We're that guy.
Yeah.
Zombies never really caught on early on until Romero. Until Romero realized that with zombies, it's quantity. It's not the individual.
Right.
What's terrifying about zombies is that they keep coming, that they keep at you.
And
it's not a matter of who the individual one is.
Right.
Because there's 12 behind them.
Mm-hmm. And also at this time, because Night of the Living Dead came out in 1968, and by that time, horror films were kind of in a lull. Vincent Price would do his token one a year.
Right, Hammer Films had done every one of the Universal ones with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
Right, in one way, shape,
or
form.
And some of them were very good.
Right.
And they were the ones that introduced, the breakthrough there was color.
Right.
And women in low-cut
Which we're all for here at Film Sociology.
But then, yeah, Romero said, no, let's just, partly because of budget.
Low budget, black and white, let's make it black unknown and white. Actors.
Right, which the benefit of unknown actors, and I feel this way, I think some people, film buffs have a tendency to like foreign films that are just as good as American films, but like them better sometimes because they're unknown actors. Because you don't know going into a foreign film or going into a low budget horror film, who's going to survive?
Right.
You don't know who's going to make it to the end.
You know, Joe Superstar has in his contract that he does not get killed or he's not going to be the killer.
Right.
That's
which tangentially is one of the reasons I still love Deep Blue Sea because of what happens in the middle of that movie.
Great speech by Mr. Jackson.
Exactly. But, you know, in zombie films, you don't know who's going to make it. And an actor can make it through half the film and be in the rest of the film as a zombie. So you still have that.
Sure.
Suspense thing going
on. Now, I don't have my timeline with me because
right.
I don't have a timeline, period. But I was trying to remember when Rosemary's Baby came out, because that was the only big budget horror film I could think of in 1960. Rosemary's Baby?
Yes, I saw it.
Mr. I Don't Like Scary Freaky Stuff?
Yep.
Really?
Saw it.
By your own choice?
Nope.
It wasn't by me?
Nope.
So it was before you met me?
Yes.
And you're all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Scary film, isn't it?
It's creepy.
Yeah, it's more right, creepy.
It's creepy. But that was in the 68, 69.
But I couldn't remember which came first, but that was the only big budget studio film I could think of that maybe shook a nerve as far as horror. But like you said, with Night of the Living Dead, that not only rocked horror cinema, but independent cinema.
Sure. It said that, hey, wait a minute, you can make more money with your unknown actors and your black and white and
you don't have to pay them as much.
Your lousy film stock.
Right.
Than they can. But it's still, I mean, even with the popularity of that film, people forget it still took 10 years until Dawn of the Dead was made. You know, Romero tried a lot of other things.
Yeah, I was like, he did, and much to his credit. I mean, he did keep doing it. And it just seems like he's at that point in his career where he just kind of keeps dipping into the well.
He goes back, and maybe there have been a few too many recently.
Probably.
But he's still trying interesting things.
Sure.
So having his brand on something.
Because when you hit the social commentary apex, I think, with Dawn.
Right.
Of consumerism and the malls and everything. So what happened between Night and Dawn?
Between Night and Dawn. There was some attempts, you know, but there wasn't much at all. It's amazing the few caught on. The only one that's really tends to be on anyone's radar is Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, which just had a great title.
Directed by Bob Clark.
Right, and not a great movie, but it had a great title.
No.
But still not much there because, you know, filmmakers didn't really catch on to the idea that there was money to be made in zombies. And maybe, you know, the culture wasn't there yet either.
And I think also because, Last House on the Left, Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
right.
So it became the unknown slasher
right.
kind of pictures. And then it got another boost. And again, the timeline I'd have to check is, you know, which came first, Halloween or Dawn of the Dead in that time. But
Halloween would have been
78.
Yeah,
because I remember being.
And Dawn of the Dead
I remember going to the theater with my older brother and dad to see Halloween. I'm fine.
But people still knew that Dawn of the Dead was kind of a heavier film in a different way.
Right.
You know, there was a lot more going on.
Slower eating.
Yeah.
if you think about the violence that's in Halloween than the violence that's in Dawn of the Dead.
Right. Yeah. But so. Dawn of the Dead also opened the door for you to laugh, too. Not a lot, but it cracked open that door.
Right. There were no Freddy Krueger-esque wisecracks,
right.
But there was humor, especially the people traipsing through the mall and falling
sure.
over
it,
the things.
You were able to even if it's uncomfortable laugh, even if it's scared laugh, you were able to do that. That Evil Dead took it much further.
Oof.
You were able to scream hysterically.
That's true.
And
yeah, there was some funny, freaky stuff in those.
There's a lot of, you know, I remember seeing that at the Budco Goldman Theater in Philadelphia, which very frequently flooded. And they didn't care. They still ran the movies anyway. This is a theater where I saw a triple feature of Mortuary, Funeral Home, and Gates of Hell.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Woo.
Yeah, this was it's a rainy Sunday.
You're talking first Evil Dead.
Yes, first Evil Dead.
That was Genesee Valley Theater, Flint, Michigan. and the big deal was, of course, Sam Raimi was a Michigan State
right.
graduate. And that was also the film that had the camera, that is his Steadicam, which was basically a camera nailed to a plank of wood,
right.
Or like a 2x4, and two guys on each end running through the forest
right.
with the camera low.
Because running
Great
through
look.
The woods with expensive equipment is always a good move.
Yeah, it's always a good safe move. But if the camera doesn't break, it looks fabulous.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing I think of, and then you can rattle off the chapters, but
no,
I think of the it was kind of it was about time they came up with the concept of the super fast sprinting zombies in 28 Days Later.
Right, and there's still arguments among zombie people about whether it's an actual zombie. If you give it a medical reason for happening, are they still zombies?
And I tell those people to get a job and an application yes. and relax.
If it's eating people, if it's difficult to kill, you know, it's in the ballpark.
Okay.
It's in the ballpark. So that's what we did. What we did in the book was take these films film by film, kind of give you either an introduction or a refresher or some insight into the making of the film, a little bit of the background. We put it in a little bit of cultural context. But the book isn't just a movie guide. It's also a quiz book. Mm-hmm. So every chapter has DEFCON 1, DEFCON 2, and DEFCON 3 quizzes for ones and the extremely detailed
fans. Do you have appetizing titles with those DEFCON levels?
No, we just keep it at that.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then we go – and there's also puzzles in the book. We have crossword puzzles. We have
– Really? Call Will Shorts.
What we're calling Sudokill. Where we have body parts that you need to rearrange in the proper order.
Are you going to – is there a copyright problem with the Sudoku? No.
I think we can get away with it.
Okay,
we'll see
enough.
What happens.
Right.
And, you know, a variety of different kind of puzzles and quizzes and that kind of stuff. So we keep it lively. You know, I tend to write books for the smallest room in your house, the ones you keep on the porcelain behind you. And so, you know, it's a good bathroom
read. To use a quote from The Big Chill, you can read Dostoevsky, but you can't finish it. So
exactly. So anyway, how many
for this book? How many zombie films do you think you watched?
Oh, but, well, between my co-writer Ed Wank.
Hey, Ed. How you
Ed,
doing?
How are you? He did a lot of the heavy lifting on the ones we hadn't seen.
Okay.
So I'd say there are at least 40 films in.
All right.
At least 40 zombie films.
And how's your family?
And we're waiting to upgrade when, you know, World War Z comes out.
Oh, geez. That's right. So how was your family in your research period?
You know, it was a lot of late night viewing. There's only so many that the 10-year-old, I know some people have no problem with letting their kids watch flesh-eating zombies. And, you know, I'm not going to question your parenting.
Right.
But I keep my kid out of it, you know, and he was a little bored by White Zombie and I walked with a zombie. So
I can understand that. And, you know, overrated band as well.
Very nice.
Thank you.
You know I was going to say that.
I was wondering.
No, I never got into him. No. And he's director, he's all right.
But we also include a chapter on Michael Jackson's Thriller video.
I see.
We have an introduction to the band, The Zombies.
John Sonata is enjoying that.
All of that
Walking
sort
Dead?
Of thing in
a little
there.
Bit of Walking Dead?
Absolutely.
There you go.
You know, so we try to mix it up a little bit and keep wherever zombies are on the sort of the pop
Pride,
culture
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
It mentioned in there.
Cool.
Film on the way out. We'll add a chapter in the next edition.
We'll see if
that.
The film ever
Although happens. I believe, I just have this belief that book, although it was a bestseller and consistent bestseller, I think it's probably one book that people read half of more
just,
than a lot of other
to...
books. I think people read that book, got into it. It was a funny concept. But those mashups, I don't know if people really go the distance as much as... with some other books.
And I know it's still, I think that thing is still in development hell, so.
Yeah. You know. No, I think it's still, but let's give some credit, though, to local writer Sam Stahl, who wrote Night of the Living Trekkies.
Yes.
Which is a very funny book, which I did read to the end, which is a zombie book set at a Star Trek convention.
And what's the difference?
It seems inevitable. You know,
that's Shaun of the Dead.
In that book. And there's an amazing... kind of commercial promotional film made about the book. It has not been made into a movie, but there's a sort of movie trailer of that.
Oh, wow.
Which makes you really want to see a movie version. Very funny. Search it on YouTube.
Okay, so where can people go to get the book?
People can get it online, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, any of those. If you're nearby and you have my number, you can call me and I can try to make sure you get a copy.
Okay, this is not the bathroom wall. We don't give out phone numbers here.
It's also in bookstores all over the place.
Cool.
You know, tweet me a note at Lou Harry.
There you go.
You can find it there.
Well, good, man. It's good to have you here. Well, let's take a short break. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. We'll talk about the Indiana Film Journalists Association Awards. We'll talk about a film obituary. It happened a couple weeks ago, but it's an obscure but unforgettable performer.
Is this where we mentioned Harry Morgan and the Barefoot Executive?
No, we're not mentioning. Oh, no, we should do that. Something much more obscure and this particular actor in film, it's not just for morning radio anymore. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Thank you, Wesley. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org, or I'm also on Facebook, or you can go to Theater on the Square tonight, tomorrow at 8 or Sunday at 2:30 if you have film questions. I'll answer them after the performance of It's a Wonderful Life. Don't ask me during. Don't be that guy. Don't be that crowd. So Lou Harry is hanging out with me, co-author of Know Your Zombies and fellow IFJA, Doughy White Guys with Glasses, and Gina.
If you want to argue about movies, you join our group.
That's true. And you have 5-hour lunches. No, it was 3.
That was fun.
Just
though.
Two. Yeah, we do that. Thank you to Soms for letting us hang out there. Kobe Slagle's hanging out.
Yep.
And we want to talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. Some old titles, some new titles. And one of the probably the big title to come out this week was something that we had nominated for the Original Vision Award. And for me, the biggest surprise film of 2011, and that's Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you have that title, you have a certain expectation in your mind, and that didn't happen.
Well, also, if Tim Burton hadn't made a complete botch out of a reboot of the series, that the expectations might have been different for this film, because the expectations going into the Tim Burton film were, oh, this could be interesting. And it was god awful.
I thought it was interesting. I hated the ending.
Hated the movie.
Ending was terrible. So,
yeah. So here you have, okay, they're going to do it again.
Right. So, and with that title, and then you have James Franco, and this, mm-hmm. you know, at first you think, well, Franco doesn't turn anything down, so why not? Brian Cox is in this as well. Andy Serkis, well, his physical work is
John
seen,
Lithgow.
And John Lithgow.
But none of those names raise the bar and make you expect a terrific movie.
But what happens is, the thing that makes this a big surprise is it is not a quote-unquote Planet of the Apes film. It's not a shirtless James Franco running from guys in bad ape make outfits.
No, wait, don't go with the bad ape makeup. The makeup was not bad until the fifth movie.
Fair enough. All right, fine. So
it's for the extras.
It's not a shirtless James Franco being netted by guys in ape makeup and costumes. And I remember comparing it to Awakenings, because mm-hmm. it's a scientist who's trying to find a cure for his dad who has Alzheimer's, played by John Lithgow. Good to see him again. And of course, they raise this ape almost like a child, mm-hmm. and it gets to be too cumbersome because, well, he's an ape, not a child.
Right.
And then, of course, has to go to the animal shelter run by big bad Brian Cox and the blonde kid from Harry Potter. And things go horribly, horribly wrong.
Right.
So, and by the way, for me,
or horribly, horribly right, depending on whose side
depending
you're
on which side you're on. That's true. Which evolution you're at. So the fact that it's more science runs amok than, yeah, humans running away from apes. Really good. And also CG used for good, not for evil.
Exactly.
In
it's
circus
it's not
really
about overloading the screen with special effects.
Right.
And it's still there's really interesting, you know, they don't overtly discuss the stuff, but there's interesting questions because you as an audience member have to decide, you know, how comfortable are you with the fact that, you know, the revolutionary who's been oppressed is taken over.
Mm-hmm. Take that as you will.
Yeah.
Subtle. So, yeah, exactly. And then the ending, which I remember I talked with Robert Irvine about this. He you know, expects a sequel out of this. I don't know if there's going to be, but I don't think there needs to be.
There doesn't need to be. I think there's room for the story to evolve in interesting directions.
Except Kim Hunter and Roddy McDowall are dead. As is Sal Mineo, for that
matter. But you got to respect the original Planet of the Apes series, where after the second film, they blow up the world, and they still manage to make 3 more movies.
Right, because and some folks, especially basement dwellers, would compare this one to, I believe, Conquest?
The Conquest, yeah.
Conquest. So there's a double feature. For me, the double feature of 2011 is this film and Project Nim.
Project Nim, yeah.
Which, if the message from Rise of the Planet of the Apes doesn't get you angry about the modern world, right, Project Nim will. Project Nim will really, really irritate you about scientists. Mm-hmm.
And on a purely superficial level, one of the things that Rise of the Planet of the Apes brings up, which I think is going to be more of a discussion in the next few years, is do you give awards to performances that are CGI enhanced?
Correct. Because here's a guy who was in Lord of the Rings, King Kong, mm-hmm, and Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and was pretty much the acting highlight of at least two of those.
Right. And if you looked at Rise of the Planet of the Apes and put it in the if there was an award for most interesting character,
oh yeah,
in films, yes, this year, forget about acting, that would be, he was one of the most interesting characters in film.
Meanwhile, Wall-E would be griping that they should have done this years ago.
But right, exactly. Wall-E's pretty great, too.
Yeah. So that's out. Kung Fu Panda 2 is out for those that want more pandas fighting and falling down and going boom.
Yeah, it's more of the same. It's not bad. It's right. Certainly, there are a lot worse animated films out there. It's fine.
Exactly. A lot of homages to Asian cinema. That's right. One of the things I loved about the first one is little like Crouching Tiger, mm-hmm, and Hero and House of Flying Daggers, which everybody should really, really own. Let's see what there's just. Oh, the Transformers trilogy is now out on Blu-ray if you really need that. Let's move on.
Yeah.
There's also Fright Night, the original, or not the remake.
Which
for me, one of the big arguments that you get about 3D is that it looks too dark. It, mm-hmm, it doesn't look right. And this was probably the darkest in, not in tone, but actual physicality, a dark-looking print of Fright Night in 3D. Now, granted, in the remake, you have Anton Yelchin, who's playing Charlie. You have Colin Farrell chewing up scenery. I think I like watching Colin Farrell go over the top like I do Anthony Hopkins and Michael Caine going over the
and
top.
And Al Pacino to a certain extent.
So the fact that he's got that he's got that card going for him at such a young age, right, he's probably my age. But it just, and it's supposed to be set in the outskirts of like a new suburb outside of Las Vegas. But it just looks like Bad Day for Night, a lot of it. So, and I know there were some people that griped about Thor in 3D looking really dark and bad. I don't know about this one. Not necessary. Was it needed? Probably not. I mean, Fright Night, was the original Fright Night, which is also on Blu-ray this week from 1986, was okay. Yeah, it's fine.
You know, and sometimes I think it's a generational thing. I mean, we don't mind that in the, you know, that the front page became His Girl Friday, became this, became that. That, you know, Frankenstein, you know, there were new Frankenstein films every 15 years or so back in the day. But for, you know, if we grew up with a movie, sometimes we react negatively to the fact that it's being remade.
Right.
You know, there was a new Jekyll and Hyde film every, what, 8 years?
That's
back
true.
In the day?
And, you know, Jane Eyre, Pride and Prejudice, yeah, you know, but I guess we don't hear the NPR crowd say, you know, or the Masterpiece Theater crowd saying my childhood has been raped. You know, not like A-Team or some of the other stuff from the 80s that was out. So anyway, that's also out. For those who need it, there's an extended director's cut of The Expendables. I don't know what else is going to be on there since Jean-Claude and Chuck are not in the first one, and they're in the second one. So take that for what it is. Tokyo Drifter is on Criterion. I love Japanese crime films from the 60s, and that's one of the better ones out there. Heavenly Creatures, Peter Jackson, Kate Winslet, before
he had a budget.
Before he had a budget, exactly. City of God, if you want to feel better about Gary, Indiana, watch this film about Brazil. The Rocketeer.
Oh, there you go.
Which is, you know, which was supposed, I remember from 1990, was supposed to be the next big franchise. And, mm-hmm, and
it's
there's
a fun movie.
And there's a fun kind
and
of
Jennifer
throwback.
Jennifer Connelly at her most
1990
gorgeous.
1990 Jennifer Connelly. My God. Kobe. 1990 Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not as old as the other women I have you Google online, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. Put it like between that and Hotspot.
Yeah.
Was her moment. But speaking of you mentioned Rocketeer. I have to mention, I have a guilty pleasure for the movie Rocket Man. Disney live action, goofy comedy. But listen, Harlan Williams, the star of that, is at Crackers Comedy Club in Broad Ripple this weekend.
He is. I heard him on a certain morning television. Because you know what? Blowing gas in a spacesuit is.
I'm sorry. I got laughs out of Rocket Man.
Fair
it's not brilliant, and but it's a fun movie.
Not as good as the Elton John song?
But I had no problem, and it's a PG. It's a, you know, except for the blowing gas in the spacesuit stuff.
Well, apparently you can get, you can do that in a G film, but
right, I know. But I'm just saying it doesn't push it deliberately into PG-13. I think it's a funny movie.
Okay, so that's
and
awesome.
I'm apparently the only person in the room who feels that way, but that's okay. And that's
it
all right.
Happens. It that's happens. All right. You got that one right, Cody.
Shout out to Harlan Williams there. I think Rocket Man's a fun movie.
Okay, we also have Velvet Goldmine, mm-hmm. Christian Bale, and Ewan McGregor and Toni Collette, if I remember correctly. That's early. No, it's Todd Haynes
in that phase between Empire of the Sun and
Newsies.
And it's after Newsies.
Before Batman, of course.
Before Batman,
before he started getting gravel throat and started yelling at the crew.
come on.
No, this one is captures the glam music scene of the 70s really, really well, and kind of a mystery about. Is it a glam Eddie and the Cruisers? Maybe a little bit.
I hope they didn't pitch it that way.
No, I didn't pitch it that way. But critics like me compare it that way. So, and apparently, Kobe's special guest, Fair Sweet Bianca, is not going to be here. And that's okay. We talked about it. But a film that she spoke highly of and made you watch, and we cannot quote her.
Nope.
But,
it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. But the musical Meet Me in St. Louis is now on Blu-ray. And you watched it with Fair Sweet Bianca,
mm-hmm.
and she told you, and I'm gonna reword this properly, and I love the fact that
The conversation went like this.
Okay,
I'll set it up. You be Bianca.
It's hard for me to be Bianca, but go on.
What are you watching?
Meet Me in St. Louis.
What's that?
It's a musical. Are you kidding? That movie is the stuff. See. There are certain things you use that phrase for. A really good tackle in football, maybe a monster slam dunk.
A cool party.
A really whacked out action scene in
a
movie.
And not for a clanging trolley?
Not, but apparently for a clanging trolley. And have yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Right.
Which, by the way, you can hear in the pre-show of A Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life, this weekend at Theater on the Square. It was fun trying to find Christmas music from the 1940s.
Can I do one other movie musical connection to something going on in Indianapolis?
On the film show? Absolutely not.
Let me throw this in there. At the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra Yuletide Celebration,
yes.
Hosting the show is Liz Calloway, co-hosting with her sister Ann Hampton Calloway.
Hello, ladies.
Liz Calloway, who you may not know the name offhand, has done a lot of Broadway. She's also the voice of Anastasia.
In
the movie.
In the Fox animated version.
In the animated film.
So because Meg Ryan can't sing for Squad.
Exactly.
Yes.
So there you go. So they brought in Liz
Calloway.
She's
the Marnie Nixon of Fox animation. No.
She's done a lot of Disney animated stuff.
She's not just known for The Nanny.
Your favorite voice. That's Ann Hampton Calloway.
That is Ann Hampton.
She wrote the Nanny theme song.
Our Halloway sisters correspondent, Lou Harry, right?
No,
I own albums by both of them, especially on Telarc. So
very good.
Yeah, they're going to be in town. Lots of fun. Okay, you mentioned Harry Morgan.
I mentioned Harry Morgan.
Who, of course, passed at 96. And yes, a lot of people thought he was already dead. It's okay. Ava Goda is still with us,
mm-hmm.
and Tim Conway. And of course, the two big series, MASH and Dragnet.
Right.
But if you do an IMDb search, Slagle, it's one of the kind of the great,
Harry Morgan was in this.
He was in that. High Noon.
Oh, yeah.
The judge in Inherit the Wind.
Mm-hmm. What am I looking for?
The Shootist. Look up Harry Morgan's IMDb page. I'm going to guess, including TV, I'm going to say over 150.
Probably. 125 at least.
Yeah.
I would put Barefoot Executive up there in the top 10.
Which is a film I've not even thought of in years.
I think people should double feature that with Network.
Ooh. Here we are at the Harry Morgan, 1915 to 2011. Actor, 159 titles.
Wow. That's some work.
Yes, it is.
And when was his last acting job? I think he was like Third Rock from the Sun.
Looking here, I see Crosswalk in 1999.
Yep.
So, wow, 12 years.
Two things, two things that got the largest crowd. I used to book movies in the basement of my dormitory in Philadelphia.
You were that
Temple
guy.
University. I was that guy. We were the one, we had to run and get the VHS tapes.
Oh, my
You know,
gosh.
That kind of stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, the two things that got the largest crowd, not things we got VHS for.
Right.
Final episode of MASH.
Of course.
And the screening of The Day After.
Oh,
when
I remember
that aired
that.
On TV.
Yes. Going yeah. back to that, that's an end of the world movie that really scared people.
Final episode of MASH that seemed to go on for
it was two and a half
an additional
hours.
Year.
It, well, that, you know, when
it was probably the worst episode of MASH.
No, yes. there were far more preachier episodes of MASH that were worse than the final episode. There has to be.
It was a baby.
It was a baby. You know what? And they had dark hair at the beginning of the Korean War. All right. So here's the old bit, because this is one. The actor's name is, well, he kind of morphed into an actor. He just wound up playing roles in it. But his name is Bill McKinney. And he's known notably for two films. One is The Outlaw Josie Wales. He's also one of those guys in Deliverance.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. In fact, if you look on the Onion page, the picture of Bill McKinney in, how should I put it, mid-squeal. Mm-hmm. And no, we are not gonna ask Mr. Beatty for comment. But yeah, that guy died when he was 80 on December, first week of December, I should say. But apparently did stuff in Alias Smith and Jones and did movies like She Freak and appeared on The Monkees and I Dream of Genie. So, yeah, he was sort
working.
Of a working actor. But and depending on who you talk to, when the moment happens, and by the way, talking about Deliverance is not just for Bob and Tom anymore. Mm-hmm. But when the moment happens, apparently it went on a little too long. Director John Boorman didn't yell cut long enough, and apparently, and I think Burt Reynolds wrote this in his autobiography, that he ran on camera and grabbed Mr. McKinney and threw him off of his co-star.
This is what Burt
said. This is kind of a Rashomon thing, and I guess I still need to find, because Ned Beatty did Inside the Actor's Studio, which is well-deserved, I might add. And it's going to be really...
As opposed to some of the Inside the Actor's Studio, when it's like somebody
who's only been
in
the film for 5 years.
Yeah.
And when Ned Beatty dies, it's going to be so bloody unfair that it's just going to talk about this film by itself.
May he live.
So, but yeah, so there's a Rashomon to that particular moment. Mm. But of course, it's... You know, one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a film.
I'm sure
most guys have seen in a film. And you know. But yeah, apparently there's also squeallikeapig.com for what that is. But also appeared in films like The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. He was in Junior Bonner. He was in The Shootist with Harry Morgan, who was also looking after John Wayne.
It all ties together.
Yep. And
it's The Shootist Curse.
Yes. He was also in Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, worked with Clint on Outlaw Josie Wales and Pink Cadillac. And I know nobody's thought of Pink Cadillac until I brought it up.
There we go.
What else? First Blood. So
whenever you needed characters with dirty fingernails.
Yeah. He was also a guard in a Green Mile. I didn't realize that. But yeah, lots of stuff there. But yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
So you're a part of pop culture when you do something like that.
That's right. And, you know, we assume sometimes, you know, as outsiders from Hollywood, that you don't, you know, these people, you know, a total choice over their careers. But, you know, anyone from the top stars on down, they're at the mercy of what films are available.
Pretty much.
You know, and if you want to work.
You go where the work is.
You take the gig. And I'm curious going into this if they really thought it was a, you know, how much of a prestige project did they think Deliverance was going to be? I mean, I know it was based on a
James
literary
Dickey
novel.
Novel.
It was, you know,
one of the finest poets at that time. Have you ever seen Deliverance, Kobe?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Really?
Nope.
I'm gonna add that to the list.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant experience.
It's not a pleasant experience, but I remember writing a high school psych paper on Deliverance about role reversal, because all four characters have a 180 degree turn. The leader becomes the disabled. The coward has to be the leader. The most sensible one gets killed. And the most cynical gets to meet Bill McKinney. So,
well, can I go off on a slight rant here?
Go, Dennis Miller.
While we're talking about sexual assault in movies.
Oh, jeez.
No, here we go. Give me a minute on this.
Oh, boy. All right.
Nobody is talking about the fact that George Clooney in The Descendants sexually assaults Judy Greer. Nobody is talking about this. And it's
you're talking about.
But I'm talking about it. I want to raise that point. I thought The Descendants was an okay movie. Going back to our judging,
which we'll get to in a minute.
I think it tends to get, it's being elevated higher than it deserves to be right now by critics across the country.
Okay.
And one of the things that got under my skin in that movie, in addition to the voiceover crutch in the first half of it that made me think I was watching Fantastic Mr. Fox 2.
Oh, but, that's it's
but
not
here we go.
All right.
No, it was telling us the movie instead of showing us. But Then about three quarters of the way, and I don't like to talk about things that are more than halfway through a movie.
Right.
But in this case, George Clooney, in what's supposed to be like a funny moment, sexually assaults Judy Greer, and it's not even, and it's not treated in future scenes like it ever happened. And if it were an unattractive actor, I think it would have gotten a lot more attention.
And I think lots of, well, I would say the same thing if ugly looking people acted the way the cast of My Best Friend's Wedding and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days act that way.
But even, but not just, I mean, beyond the, look, I just think that he's getting a pass on a lot.
I see.
And it got under my skin in that movie, and my rant is done.
Okay.
Feel free to call in.
No, we talk.
That's a very calm rant.
That's the next step. Oh yeah, no. What's, well, we had Mike Gundy. Isn't that enough for you as far as heated rant?
I'm not gonna get angry because I want my argument to be heard.
And we
feel like if I rant, it's not gonna be heard. So if you're watching The Descendants, you know you're allowed to go, wait a minute, did you really do what you just did? And we're gonna give the character a complete pass on this?
Well, he's got a lot on his mind. He's got two kids to raise.
So he should sexually assault somebody in front of his daughters.
No, I guess not. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. To go right back in. That's cool. No, welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. I'm hanging out with Lou Harry and with Kobe Slagle, and I'm not looking at Judy Greer at all.
Who I met briefly in L.A. a couple months ago.
Really?
Did you kiss her? Lovely.
Did you kiss her
woman
on the front porch?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Against
and
her
then
will.
Matthew Lillard got really angry if he knew what was going on. All right, we're gonna have fun. All right.
Well, I think it's one of the best things about the movie is Matthew Lillard.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him to do something that was
Let's step back beyond Scooby Doo though. Very
Scream.
Good in Love's Labor's Lost.
Yes. I have a special spot for Love's Labor's Lost.
I do.
I love musicals where people can't sing.
But it was that was delightful, and there was one absolutely awful sequence in it. The whole masked ball sequence is terrible.
Kobe,
the rest of the movie's charming.
Kobe, everyone says I love you. Love's Labor's Lost, far better than Mamma Mia. And it's all kind of celebrity.
Yeah, I'm not big on everyone says I love you, but I agree.
That's the whole concept of anybody can be in a musical. And
well,
we were.
At long last, Love proved that they can.
And that's still not on DVD, sadly. All right. We are also, Lou Harry and I, are two of the members of the Indiana Film Journalists Association. And we had a massive lunch on last Saturday, to pick out our awards. And we announced them Sunday. And we got some cute.
It was a massive lunch. They just ate and ate and ate and ate.
Well, we
it was
need
like
to
Babette's
wait. No, I can't make a decision yet. Let's bring out another course.
You know, more sliders, please. More sliders.
Well, it was like Tom Jones. It was.
It was like
not
Tom
the singer, the movie.
Except Gina does not want to be the only girl in the Tom Jones movie.
That's
moment,
true.
So,
that's
all right.
True.
That's also an assault. But we handed our awards. So here's what we have selected.
Well, just understand first. We all brought our ideas to the table. We argued about them. Then we kind of straw polled. Then we went away and voted. So these don't necessarily reflect any individuals, but they are the collective. They're the mass mind.
That's right.
They're the Borg of our film. Yeah,
Borg. Love it. All right. So our selection for best film of the year is The Artist, which is not opened yet.
And was this in your top three or four?
At the time, it was not. Now it is.
Okay.
As I said in my voting, and I'm not, I won't expose my ballot among other things. that I moved,
right.
And I assumed every piece of mail would be forwarded to my house with the little yellow sticker. They didn't. Mm-hmm. One of them that didn't. Several packages of screeners.
Okay.
So I'm kind of catching up right now as we speak.
Okay.
So
yeah, it was in my top four.
Okay. So that's the winners, the artist, the runner-up is Lou Harry's George Clooney rape movie. I'm sorry, The Descendants.
Which was not in my top four.
Not in your top four. Other finalists, Coriolanus.
Coriolanus was one I was championing because it's great. And if you like Kurt Locker, if you don't have an automatic resistance to Shakespearean dialogue in film, if you love
with war stuff,
Ray Fiennes, it is a war movie.
Directed,
it's a political movie,
directed and starring Ray Fiennes.
It is a rich, rich, great movie. And what should be basic with Shakespeare films, it's not hard to follow. You'll get it.
There you go. Also in the finalist, Drive, which is one of my top picks because I love navel gazing, fast car movies. Mm-hmm. Hugo, Martha, Marcy May, Marlene, The Muppets, The Skin I Live In, Super 8, and Tree of Life. Those are the finalists.
Right.
Other finalists. Now, best animated film, the winner was Rango. Runner-up was Winnie the Pooh.
Which is a great range
love
of films.
Love those. Best foreign language film, Skin I Live In, the Antonio Banderas Almodovar picture. Runner-up, 13 Assassins. Best documentary, Project Nim. Runner-up, Into the Abyss.
Now, before, if I could just chime in for
Please
a second.
Do.
If you look up the stuff on the internet, if you're playing around with Indiana Film Journalists Association, you'll see that we've been lumped in an interesting way, with what's being labeled the precursors.
Mm.
We are one of the precursors now.
Yeah,
which
fear
is,
us.
Meaning all of these critics groups that chime in with their opinions, and there are all these sites that document who voted for what and what went where and commentary,
yes.
thinking what's going to lead up
and,
to the Oscars.
And one article thought it was very, very cute that we liked Win-Win.
There
so
you go.
But,
you know, it does help. I mean, this is all silly. You know, putting together lists is kind of silly.
Right.
You know, coming up with best, there's a silliness to it. But it also helps in a way. It brings, it helps us bring more screenings to town by having a voice nationally, and it helps. We hope promote some excellent work
yes.
that may not necessarily be on the radar. It kind of opens the door for
opens 3,000. It doesn't open 3,000 screens,
right? So. But it may get some of these on the radar that they might be considered for nomination.
And of course, if it means more screenings for us, that means better opportunity for you to see these films. So. Best original screenplay, Win-Win. Runner-up was Margin Call. Best adapted screenplay, George Clooney rape movie. The runner-up was Moneyball. You know I'm going to call it that now because you brought that up. He doesn't rape her. That's an episode in the debate for another time.
He commits an actionable action.
Actionable action. All right, best director. Oh. Michelle Hazavanesius?
Helvetica.
For The Artist, runner-up, Terrence Malick, Tree of Life.
Yes! It was pushing Tree of Life.
You're like Richard Probst at lunch, who would scream right. in praise right. or in disgust.
But we know it's a Tree of Life, I know, is a love-hate movie.
Yes, it is.
But it's a movie. I look at a still from this movie, and I start to well up.
It is an art. It is art. Best actress, Elizabeth Olsen for Martha, Marcy May, Marlene.
And this is a case of somebody who we're helping to put on the national radar.
Runner-up, Tilda Swinton for my pick for probably the most disturbing film of the year. We need to talk about Kevin.
Yeah, I wish it evolved to something new and different and something we haven't seen in the end. But it's a harrowing film, and she's terrific.
If you are a parent, yeah. it's gut-wrenching. If you are a parent to a son, it's really gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
So... best supporting actress, Viola Davis for The Help.
And this was another big debate. Is she the lead actress in The Help, or is she a supporting actress? She's being pushed by the Academy and everything else in the
right.
studio as actress. We had a good, healthy debate about whether she is in that film supporting actress or actress.
Meanwhile, Meryl Streep and Anthony Hopkins say shut up. runner-up.
Meryl Streep, I think, would be happy if she would push this.
That's
supporting
true.
Actress.
Runner-up for Best Supporting Actress, Amy Ryan in Win-Win. Always enjoyed that. Best Actor, Paul Giamatti for Win-Win. Runner-up, Ralph Fiennes for Coriolanus.
Yeah.
Best Supporting Actor, Christopher Plummer for Beginners. If anything, just to hear Christopher Plummer go, nts. The great scene where he calls his son after going to a loud house music party. And
right.
anyway.
And that may be the sort of John Wayne in True Grit Award.
Well, he's been around for
where you're,
the
honoring somebody for a career of work.
Yeah,
and should the Oscars be doing that? Probably not.
But also, he's had a really – the last few years for Christopher Plummer have been tremendous. He got his first nomination for The Last Station, starred in The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. He's in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Yeah. Even shows up in Priest. Right. Well, somebody
he's very good.
Yeah. He does Shakespeare at Stratford, Ontario. I know he did on Golden Pond on TV with Julie Andrews a few years ago. Right. So bully for him to keep
still
at
working.
It. Runner-up for Best Supporting Actor, Albert Brooks for Drive, which I think he's great in that. Best Musical Score, The Artist.
Which also almost could be a casting award. Because if you put Christopher Walken in that part, you're like, well, we know what Christopher Walken
and
can
do. And Ron Perlman's in it, and you expect
that
from Ron
Perlman. Yeah, we know
what's
going to happen from them. But Albert Brooks, it's a surprise.
Best Musical Score, The Artist, and then Hugo. The Original Vision Award goes to Tree of Life. I think everybody said no matter what we feel about the movie itself, it takes some serious onions to make this Tree of Life, and Terrence Malick has onions for days. The Artist is the runner-up on that. And, of course, our Hoosier Award with a film that is made with some link to the great state of Indiana, and that goes to the producer, Lindsay Goffman, who is one of the producers on Dumbstruck, a fun documentary about ventriloquist and their partners. And it's kind of one of those niche documentaries, which I'm kind of a sucker for.
Yeah, and it's also one of those documentaries where, and there a lot of them are like this, where you watch the first 5 minutes and you go, okay, that's interesting, but am I really going to be watching this for an hour and a half? And,
yes, you
and
do.
And you get caught up
yes,
in
you
it,
do.
And it's terrific.
And Kobe, when you can see the former beauty queen, who's also a ventriloquist, so not fair. It's not fair. Ventriloquist, when we were in school, didn't look like her.
Yeah.
Never. Never, ever. There's that. So, all right, we just got a couple more minutes. I think we'll have to save the Tommy Wiseau.
He can explain things next week.
He will explain things next week.
In 2 weeks, highlights.
Yeah, so first off,
you're doing a clip show?
At the end of the year, yeah.
Yeah.
Kobe and Fairsweet Bianca are going on vacation next week, so apparently I will be hosting and engineering.
Is the framing device that you're like accidentally locked in a meat locker or something like that, and then you reminisce about past shows?
Only if Judy Greer is with me.
Okay,
no, we're not doing it. Terrible. No, I think we'll still review some stuff. I'll probably bring in a guest of some kind. And then, end of the year, I will probably talk about a couple of films that open because we will have movies that open on the 23rd. Mm-hmm. But I think we might do a blatant excuse to play the Tommy Wiseau interview again. And Kobe has been working on an audio montage to you, the listener, as a way of saying thank you for supporting film sociology in year two, and here's to 20 more.
Well, 25th, what do we get? War Horse?
Yeah.
Which I know the porn title writers of America are very into that film because it's easy.
They are.
You know,
and
War Horse.
When does Tintin open? Tintin is
so-so, but it's, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to open it.
Sharpshooters with Universal T-shirts on. So.
Sorry. Girl with the Golden Tattoo. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is coming. The Golden Tattoo.
Golden?
Merging it with Man with the Golden Arm.
Sung by Lulu. All
there
right,
you go.
Here's,
sorry
here's some
that.
Words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
All right, go pick up Know Your Zombies, co-written by Lou Harry. Go to his website. Go to IBJ. You can get in touch with him there.
Yep.
Tonight, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Sunday, 2:30 at Theater on the Square. It's a Wonderful Life. I'll be there. Hopefully you will be too. Kobe, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And Punk. Make sure you run down Mass Avenue afterwards saying, Merry Christmas, Aesop's Tables!
Merry Christmas, Ron Spencer!
Basbos!
Oh, that sounds really good. And Mesh, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We go!
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for